I'm Michael Goldfarb, in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. It is 3 years, 1 month, and a few days since the second intifada of the Palestinians began, bringing an almost unimaginable level of despair to both Israelis and Palestinians. For the government of Ehud Barak and then the government of Ariel Sharon, the intifada, with its suicide bombing of civilians by Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and the Al-Aqsa Martyr Brigades, has posed a unique challenge. How do you secure your people against these attacks? The answer has been to assassinate the leadership of the organizations that send the bombers into Israel. The Israeli Air Force has carried out many of these attacks. But because most of the leaders of Hamas live in the densely populated neighborhoods of the Gaza Strip, there have been the inevitable civilian casualties. As the bombings and counterattacks have continued, some in the Israeli military have begun to speak out against targeted assassination. In September, 27 pilots in the Israeli Air Force signed a petition saying they would no longer take part in attacks that harmed civilians. The petition read, "These actions are illegal and immoral and are a direct result of the ongoing occupation, which is corrupting all of Israeli society." The signatories of this petition are not who you might think. They include highly decorated pilots, the most lauded soldiers in a warrior society. Connection listeners, how do you hear the voices of dissent in Israel? Are they disloyal saboteurs or a new vanguard for peace in the region? And what should the Israeli military do to defend its citizens against terror bombings? 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Is the number to call to join in the conversation. And in a moment, we will be speaking with the senior-ranking signatory of the petition. But first, we'll go to Hemi Shalev of the Israeli daily newspaper Ma'ariv, who joins us on a line from Israel. Hello, Hemi.
Hello, how are you?
Fine. Now, let me ask you the news of the day. The Palestinian legislature has finally approved the new cabinet of Prime Minister-designate Ahmed Kureya. Tell us a bit about that. Hemi, I think we may be losing Hemi.
Hello?
Hemi, can you hear us?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good. My question was, could you just fill us in on the news of the day, which is that the cabinet of Palestinian Prime Minister Ahmed Kureya has been approved?
Yes, well, the Israeli government is closely watching the developments in Ramallah. I think there is a mix of faint hope and heavy skepticism about the new government. I think most Israeli ministers put much hope because of the fact that obtained most of the control over security matters. On the other hand, and nonetheless, the Israeli government is perhaps showing a more generous attitude towards Abu Ala's government than one might have expected, and is likely to engage Abu Ala in attempts to achieve a new ceasefire.
Now, what is the general reaction in Israel itself? I mean, this is just one more step in what seems to be a circuitous moment in the history of Israel and its relationship with its Palestinian neighbors, that the Intifada has been going on for 3 years. And does anyone actually think that a new Palestinian prime minister is going to make a blind bit of difference to finding a solution to the crisis?
Well, no, I don't think rationally anybody thinks that.
Okay.
Especially in the past few weeks, Israelis have come to the conclusion that the policies until now, although they may have been successful in curtailing terrorism.
Hemi, I want to thank you for joining us. Unfortunately, we're having real trouble with Hemi Shalev's line from Israel. And I'd like to now turn to retired Brigadier General Iftah Spector, who was the, I suppose, the ranking officer who signed the petition of 27 Air Force reservists saying that they would no longer fly missions over civilian areas. Iftah Spector commanded a fighter squadron in the 1973 war. He participated in the bombing of the Iraqi nuclear reactor at Osirak in 1983, and during his career shot down 15 enemy aircraft. He's visiting the U.S. right now on business, and he joins us from the National Public Radio Station WHRV in Norfolk, Virginia. Hello, Iftah Spector.
Good morning.
Now, tell us a bit about this petition. How did it come up? Did you initiate it, or did it come to you and you decided to sign it?
Well, Michael, let me put things straight first. This petition is not signed by any active pilot. It is signed by civilians who happen to be pilots in reserves. That's a very important point, in my opinion.
It's a very important point, but in America, when we think of reservists, it means one thing. But in Israel, a reservist is a slightly different thing, since men up until what age are on military reserve, in the military reserves?
55, and sometimes over it, like me.
Like you.
I'm 63 years old now.
So you were not flying missions, but you were actively involved in training pilots who were.
Yes, reserves in Israel is a different system from yours, in which once a week, a day, you are an officer or a soldier, and the other 6 days, you are civilian. Mm-hmm. So this petition you're talking about was signed in the civilian phase of our life.
Right.
None of us was in uniform under government pay at the time.
Okay.
That must be clear.
All right, let's get to precisely what the petition said and what it is you hoped it would do.
Okay. The petition says three basic things. First of all, it begins and also ends in a declaration that the signatories are willing to fight, even give their lives, for the security of our country, Israel. Having said that, there are two other points inside. One of them is that the signatories are not agreeing to hit civilian innocent people, one, and two, that the occupation of 3.5 million Palestinians is leading necessarily to this condition. That is the petition.
Now, is this a recent conclusion for you personally, that the occupation is leading to these conditions where Israeli soldiers are called upon to take part in actions that actually lead to the death of Palestinian civilians?
Not really. I'm in a movement against the occupation for the last years, actively, giving lectures on it, doing demonstrations, so on. And this petition came to my desk, another piece of paper out of many that I signed before, maybe 10 or so, and I signed it also because I agree with it.
And what is your solution for the occupation? End it.
Yes, I understand, Michael. Let me begin with saying that only God Almighty has solutions. So I cannot speak of a solution. But I speak of a way. I think of a way, reasonable way, possible way, that can and should be taken by my government. And the way is disengagement between the two nations, or two people, let's say, the Israelis and the Palestinians. Physical disengagement, which should and can be done, if not through agreement that we are failing to get to, unilaterally by our government. That's what I call them to do.
When you say disengagement, you mean withdrawal to where? That the Israeli government would simply withdraw from the entire West Bank and the Gaza Strip, or things that had been negotiated almost fully between Oslo and then the last negotiations before the Intifada broke out? I mean, where, when you talk about disengagement, are you talking about disengaging too?
Michael, here I have to hope that the listeners have the mental picture of what is Israel, where is the West Bank, what is the Gaza Strip, and where the populations are. It's difficult if you don't have it. So let me try and put it in a simplistic way. The populations are at most divided. The Palestinians live in places called the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. The Israelis live in an area that is called Israel pre-67 war. Now, there is some filtration from each side to the other side. We have settlers who began about 10 years or 15 years ago to settle in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. The opposite is done by Palestinians who come basically to find work, make some living, and after this, settle in Israel, sometimes get married, build a small hut, and they are not citizens of Israel, not allowed to be there. Now, since the law of Israel is only on Israel, and the territories that I said are occupied territories, I think that in a simplistic way, the line is clear. We should withdraw back and disengage the populations, and this will lower the friction and cool down the conflict, including, I hope, in some time, the terrorist attacks.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things, of course, is that you talk about withdrawal, and of course, much of the negotiation that's gone on before 1993, but to the present day, does call for this withdrawal and, you know, the creation of a Palestinian state living side by side with Israel. And the security issue has always been, for Israelis, the holdup, certainly in the last 3 years, so that you would say you don't need to worry about the security issue. Maybe it will bring security, maybe it won't, but the conditions that are more likely to create a secure existence for Israel is simply to withdraw.
It's more deep than that. I want you to realize, Michael, that the threats to Israel did not begin in the last 3 years. Since its inception, Israel has been under attack, first by all the surrounding Arab countries, and lately, now that we have peace with most of them, it is the conflict with the Palestinians that took a very ugly way, especially from the Palestinian side. I'm sorry to say, the terrorist attacks intentionally against innocent populations in Israel are a thing that should be stopped, if needed, by force.
I understand, but what I was just trying to understand for myself is you're saying, just withdraw. Don't worry until you have a secure situation and guarantees.
I do not call it withdrawal so much. You say separate, coming back to ourselves.
Or separating. The verb you were using was to separate, and you're saying you're advocating separation and don't of the government. Separate. Don't wait until that magic day when there are no more suicide bombers amongst the Palestinians. Yes or no?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yes, that is what I'm saying.
Okay, we're going to pick this point up after the break. The music means we're coming to the break. Caller is 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, to join in a conversation with Iftah Spector. Dissent growing in Israel about the policies of the last 3 years to contain Palestinian terrorism. I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is The Connection. I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is The Connection. We're talking in this hour about a change that's happening in Israeli society. In recent months, we've seen 100,000 people turn out on the anniversary of the death of Yitzhak Rabin, an anniversary that had gone virtually unmarked for some years. And we've also seen growing levels of concern in the Israeli military about the tactics that are being used to suppress Palestinian terror attacks. Are they actually encouraging more of the attacks? And we're talking about this with a former brigadier general in the Israeli Air Force, Iftah Spector, who's on the line in our studio in Norfolk, Virginia. Iftah, are you aware that there's this growing sense in Israel it's not just your 27 pilots or reserve pilots who signed this petition, that people are really saying, you know, what we've been doing is not working.
I hope there is. At least I work on it for the last years.
Yeah. Now, because a lot of people who listen to this program and follow this story very closely might suspect, I mean, would you characterize yourself as, you know, from the left, a kind of peace person of long standing, or is your place in the political spectrum somewhere else?
Well, I am definitely not a peacenik. Just imagine my career. I think there are two extremes, and I reasonably think that I'm in the middle. Let us say that the one extreme is the peaceniks, who believe that if they sign a good petition, a good agreement, very well worded, there will come peace. And the other extreme is those who simply want to continue and hold with the Holy Lands, with the 3 million Palestinians over it, and wait for the Messiah to come. And I am coming in, reasonably in my opinion, with a possible program. What to do?
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Mike is on the line from Florence, South Carolina.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to thank again the NPR for such a great show and applaud the general for his courage. I had a question, but he basically answered it in his explanation as to really why what his real goal was in this, and it seems to be more of separation than integration. But I still think it's a start. That's my comment, and I'll just hang up and listen in. Thank you,
Mike. Thank you for your call. The other thing that has come up recently, Iftar, is the Chief of Staff, General Ya'alon, has also broken ranks quite publicly with government policy and argued that you simply can't go around the military tactics of the Sharon government are simply not working. What did you think of those comments?
I have a difficulty, Michael, with this, because I think that generals should speak in-house and with the government. Please note that I and all the 27 or more pilots and all other military people that go to the public do it as civilians, not in uniform, which is not true for General Ya'alon. In my opinion, Ya'alon should speak to Sharon and the government in-house and leave to me the public demonstrations.
Have you spoken to him about it personally?
To Ya'alon?
Yeah. Leave it to you? Okay. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Jeff is calling from Brookline, Massachusetts.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
I just wanted to make one point and then a question, is that the general here only represents a very small percentage of the members of the Israeli Air Force, and in fact only two of the people who actually signed the petition would have any role in any of these sort of attacks that he is condemning. And my main question for him is, the real problem here is the occupation didn't start the problem. The problem started the occupation. There was terrorism before 1967, and just withdrawal to the line, how will that actually help? I mean, now they can launch shells into Tel Aviv, and they can send suicide bombers even closer, and now there's absolutely no military pressure for them to stop, and I don't see any indication why they would stop if we just withdrew from the territories.
Iftar?
First of all, about some of us that are not shooters. Well, it doesn't take anything out of their right to speak. And the fact that they are pilots, shooters or not shooters, does not make them less civilian partners in the life of my state. Maybe more, a little bit. That said, about the security situation of Israel, yes, you are right. We are under threat of shelling, bombing, and terror attacks, and so on. Yes, and this is not new at all. The problem is that the occupation does not help in it. The occupation on the other hand, puts us in a much worse situation, much graver danger to the state. It is very likely signaling the end of the Jewish state, because as long as we occupy 3.5 million Arabs, Palestinians, the Jews are going to be a minority in our country. So the disengagement is much more important than a defense-only action.
Jeff, what do you say to that?
I would say that withdrawal without any agreement is just going to encourage what's the ultimate dream of many of the radical leadership in the Palestinians, which is the destruction of the state of Israel totally.
But Jeff, just to hold on there, I think that what Ifta Spector just said was that if the occupation continues very shortly in the Jewish state, because Israel now has responsibility essentially for the Palestinians, in the Jewish state you will have a Jewish minority, and the whole purpose of the Jewish state is to have a state in which Jews are in the majority. So how do you deal with that problem if you keep in an occupation situation?
I'm very much in favor of ending the occupation under a negotiated settlement. I just think the fallacy is that just by withdrawal without any sort of negotiation is not going to lead anywhere. I think you're right. I think Israel is in great danger from both ways. Whether if withdraws unilaterally, the war will just continue into 1948 Israel under some other pretext, whether it's the right of return will be fought for. But I think Israel needs to fight harder for a negotiated settlement, to force the Palestinians to a negotiated settlement. If not, I think Israel is pretty much in a terrible situation either way. I don't have a solution for it. I just think that withdrawal without any sort of resolution of the conflict is going to lead nowhere, and in fact probably lead to Israel's demise even faster than the current occupation will.
If the Spector, do you agree?
No, I do not. I think that one taking his future in his hands is a positive way, not waiting. I think that an action of that kind that I'm prophesying should and could be taken very positively by the international community. Here we are doing something to end the endless conflict. And at the same time, we are preserving the nature of the Jewish state. And of course, defense will remain to be a problem for some time, but I hope the cooling down of the situation and probably some substantial help from the world to the Palestinian state to become a normal state rather than a criminal state, which it is now, will in some time, maybe a generation, I don't know, bring to a better standing to get to peace.
Jeff, thank you for your call. Ifta, the petition said, and this is, as I quoted in the opening to the program, that the occupation corrupts Israeli society. Can you give us some specific examples of what, in your view, its corrupting effect has been?
Let me give you three. One is the economy. The fact that we occupy the territories and we settle Jewish people there is supported heavily by our economy. The economy is deteriorating since lately, 3 years. We also are, I wouldn't say embargoed, but we are looked in a worse way by the outer economical world. Investment in Israel went down. The fact is shown very well in the economical situation of Israel, in all the businesses that closed down. The old people, the young people, the education suffer very much, and all the money is simply spent out in the territories. This is one. Let me add one other thing, violence. The violence in Israel, or I'd say the violence in the areas, is radiated back clearly. And you can see it in the street, on the road, in the family, men and women, and alienation of other societies like the Israeli Arab society and like different what we call diasporas, the Russians and others. Violence is going high.
Violence is going high, mm-hmm. You're talking about
aggression.
Men and women, domestic violence,
yes,
incidents of road rage.
The numbers are going high. And you can see it when we just look on the TV, Israeli TV, Or you go down to the areas, to the territories, and see what training our youngsters are getting there in the occupation regime, what they are trained to do, and with what they come back to Israel.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. David is calling from Newton, Massachusetts.
Hello, gentlemen. General Spector, I very much appreciate the stand that you were taking. I do have a question or a concern, and that is, what kind of precedent, if any, do you think the petition sets for people in the Army who want to hold on to all of the territories in the event that the government follows your very sensible prescription for separation or even enters into a peace treaty that involves territorial withdrawal?
Yiftah Spector.
David, I've been serving in the Israeli Air Force. We call it Israeli Army. Flying in the Army. For 26 years active duty and another 20-something years as reserve officer. I have four children who served in the armored units, in intelligence, and in other things. And I have also six grandchildren that will serve when the time comes also. What examples do we give? I can say to the younger generation that while in uniform, you have to do your job. But while civilian, you have to defend your country on probably higher levels of helping the government to find a way, exposing yourself, even paying a penalty for that. I am paying price, personal price. And this is an example for citizens.
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. You're talking about setting an example. I think that what David was asking is, it's a precedent. Would you be happy to see this kind of standing up for a moral, as I think you would describe it, purpose, and a patriotic purpose is something I think you'd also see it, something that you'd like to see extend outside the ranks of reservists, you know, that you're, as you were keen to point out, you were in the reserve, the people who signed your petition were reservists. Would you like to see it spread into active ranks, people who are on active duty? Do you think it's the responsibility of officers rather than merely, you know, because there's universal conscription in Israel, that it's more for the officers to take this lead rather than, you know, the private who's basically just out there at a checkpoint hoping not to be shot?
I definitely would not like to see our people in the army as automatons who work brainlessly according to orders. In fact, there is a law in Israel against such behavior. The law, it has a name called the Law of Black Flag, which says you obey orders in all occurrences except when there is non-moral, illegal, clear order. Then you are not allowed to accept and you cannot brush away the responsibility if you do. So it's a problem that goes down to the last trigger puller, because he is also a citizen in uniform. Each and every one of us is a citizen. And when you see that illegal, immoral things are done, you must disobey, if I answer the question.
Thank you. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Jim is calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Jill, I'm sorry, my eyes are bad.
Hi.
Hi, Jill.
I'm calling to say that I think it would be great to leave the occupied territories, and it would be really wonderful if peace then broke out and everybody got along really nicely. What happens if it doesn't?
Jill, it definitely will not happen. The disengagement and return to ourselves, to our own, to a Jewish state, Zionist state, the ideal, is one point, and the security problem is another one. And no doubt we'll have to keep on deterrence and probably active action from time to time. But at least it opens a light in the end of the tunnel. You go somewhere. While if you use only force and defend yourself all the time, you don't go anywhere. This is immoral also.
Jill, what do you say?
Well, I'm saying if you've been attacked for 50-plus years, and even before the creation of the State of Israel, you have, like, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem running around Europe being a Nazi, recruiting Bosnian Muslims to seek out and kill Jews, and that started before there even was an Israel, what expectation can you realistically have that the goal isn't just to wipe out the Zionist state and wipe out all of the Jews there?
This is a key point that Jill makes, is that you, as an Israeli, do you feel that there are enough, there's a critical mass of Palestinians who would finally accept that there should be and can be a state of Israel in land essentially taken from them, which is how they would see it?
On this, I must say a word about Zionism. Zionism is an ideal and a movement that wants to state a national state for the Jews in the Holy Land of Israel. And until now, the Zionist movement has been very successful.
Yes.
Now, okay.
If we're coming up to the break, I want you to hold the thought, and the question clearly is, do you, as an Israeli, think that at this moment in time, there is a critical mass of Palestinians who would accept, finally, that the State of Israel has a right to exist, a Zionist State of Israel has a right to exist? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, the number to call to join in the conversation. I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is The Connection. I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is The Connection. We're talking in this hour with former Air Force Brigadier General Iftah Spector of the Israeli Air Force. Just before the break, Iftah, I was asking you to think about a particular question. What's your answer?
I'm continuing. Now that we have a Jewish state, a haven and refuge for the Jews all over the world, more than half of the Jews of the world live in Israel. The question of Jill was, what will the Arab do, the Palestinians? Will they agree to it? First of all, I'm very optimistic in the long range. Just look at Egypt, Jordan, Morocco, that were our enemies, and now we have peace with them. Just look at Lebanon, that we occupied part of it for 20 years, and we didn't have peace with them. And now we do not have peace, but there is non-violence. Nothing happens there. It's calm. And look at our minority of Arabs in Israel. We have 1 million Israeli Arabs who are loyal citizens. So there is nothing, in my opinion, that makes the Palestinians different. It's only they are in such a situation that they cannot agree. On the other hand, do we have any other choice? I cannot tell the Palestinians what to think. If they hate us, I cannot educate them to change it. But the most important is what we do. If we let them live, pull back, and let us live, I'm very optimistic that in the future it will become better and better.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. George is calling from Charleston, South Carolina.
Hi. I would like to say, first of all, that I enjoy your show very much. I listen all the time. And the question I had was, the petition that they've signed, they're saying that they don't want to target or fly missions over civilian sites or civilian areas. However, these terrorists, a large numbers of them, are civilians, and their bases of operations are in residential areas, in stores, and even in mosques. And I was wondering what the general would have to say about that.
Is there a military response to this situation?
First of all, I'm not a military, but I think George is practices law. Yes, of course. According to the law, you should not use military forces against citizens, and this is a problem that is part of the situation of occupation of civilians. If you disengage from them, and it is another country, and this country tries to threat us, we are in a much better basis and position to repel against it than when we are the controllers of the area and occupy them.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Nahum is calling from Nashua, New Hampshire.
Hello.
Hi.
I have the following questions for General Spector. Does he not realize, first of all, that the green line to which he would have Israel withdraw was never a political boundary? It was established as a military truce line at the end of Israel's War of Independence in 1949. Now, if he regards all the territory beyond the Green Line as being occupied by Israel, would he not also regard all the territory beyond the partition lines of the UN resolution, a partition of 1947, of also being occupation? I mean, would he not then reduce Israel to that hopeless, helpless state?
Nahum, I need to just clarify what you're saying is you disagree with the general, and because you're saying that the green line, that the 1967 boundary was not a political boundary, in your view, isn't my guess, essentially condemning Israel to actually pulling back to the 1948 boundaries. Is that what you're saying?
Well, our boundary, it's a fact, historical fact.
Okay.
Lines of 67, pre-1967, were established in 1949 and merely as a military truce or armistice line between the Israel armed forces and the armed forces of the invading Arab countries. There is no political boundary there.
Nahum, I think we have the point, and I'll just bring in Iftah Spector on that.
All right. Nahum, you're calling for agreed upon borders, and so do I. The withdrawal I'm talking about is until there is a possibility, a situation, when we can negotiate and finalize about the borders. And this we did on all the other borders since 48. We did it with Egypt. Mind that we did it also with Jordan, after Jordan threw away the poisoned apple of the territories. King Hussein didn't want them. Why should we? He is closer to them, but he didn't want them, and he knew why. So, in my opinion, we should withdraw, and I didn't say to the Green Line, I said on a line between populations, to divide populations. And this will be the last border that should be agreed upon, comes the time the Palestinians have a state and are capable of negotiating, which now they clearly are not.
But there's a very physical border being drawn at the moment. The wall that is being built through the West Bank is there. I think there's construction now going on in Jerusalem, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong on that, but separating Arab neighborhoods out and away on the other side of the wall. What do you think of the construction of the wall? And second, do you think that it actually follows a line that you would defend as being a natural boundary for Israel?
I'm talking about disengagement. A wall is a physical material. The government now is building walls or parts of walls here and there, which show the government's political perception. And this is to take as much area as possible from the Palestinians, including taking in large numbers of Palestinians, which I oppose. So the fact that this is a wall doesn't mean that this is the wall. It's not the holy wall. The wall the government does is not correct, in my opinion.
It's not correct.
No, there should be partition between the populations. And on this line, which is very clear, there should be put a border. First of all, single-handedly by us, and then, later, through negotiation, it may be moved here and there, and it will end up 1 meter here or there, okay, to the left or to the right.
As a former brigadier general, I know you're keen to stress your civilian status, do you think that the building of this wall in the present situation will actually deter terrorism? Do you think that it can actually stop terrorists?
I think it is a waste of money from all point of view.
Okay. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Stan is calling from Lexington, Massachusetts.
Hi, General, or retired General. I just came back from Israel-Palestine. I was there for 2 weeks. I visited with Palestinians and Israelis in both territories, including people in the peace movement in both sides. What I came away with was a great desire from both Israelis and Palestinians for peace and an end to the occupation. I believe firmly that ending the occupation will be a big step towards ending terror. The occupation creates frustration, anger, and disbelief on the part of the Palestinians that the Israelis mean it, that the Israelis really want peace. I'm Jewish myself, and I feel it for the Jewish people throughout the world, including America and Israel, that we have to be real Jews, which means be humanitarians, not oppressed people, not occupied people. The more you occupy people, the more you get what you don't want, which is war. And we want to end that now. And we can do it unilaterally. We did it. We did it right in this country with Vietnam. We unilaterally ended the war in Vietnam by withdrawing. And it was a good move. It saved lives. I want to ask of the general whether this idea of occupation is really causing most of the terrorism from the Palestinians towards Israel.
Thank you, Stan. I want to thank you for your call. You're listening to The Connection from NPR. General, to pick up on Stan's point, it's a situation of chickens and eggs all the time in these conversations. Do you think that the occupation has actually encouraged terrorism, taking on board the fact that there's always been Palestinian aggression against Israel, terrorism, going back to the 50s and from before?
Yes, I think so. And I want to add one more thing to what Stan says, and this is Prime Minister Barak, a very brave person, was trying to end the conflict by doing peace. But the situation was not ripe for it. The Camp David thing failed. The Palestinians and Arafat simply opened an enhanced terror activity against Israel, and here we are. And that is why I'm speaking about an action, unilateral, done by us, without at that time trying to get to a peace agreement, because it is not ripe yet, even less than before.
Right. So the
wrongs we did to each other.
Yeah, basically, what you're saying is that the time isn't right, that there's still so much
time.
Is still up, and that to sit and wait for a negotiated settlement that not just the politicians can agree on, but the people in opposition to any kind of agreement will accept is not right. But what I'd like to ask you, as we're coming to the end of the hour, Stan asks an interesting question. Now, Stan is an American Jew, and the Jewish community here has as demonstrative and as violent arguments amongst themselves about the way forward in Israel as Israelis have among themselves. Do you think that American Jewry has any influence and could play any role in perhaps helping Israeli society towards a place where we don't have suicide bombers and there is some kind of security?
American Jewry always had, and the U.S. at large, always had influence very much in my country. We appreciate your great country very much. And the American Jewry is a lot of help to us. We are now in a bloody conflict. And the position the American Jews take is very important to us to know. And I'm speaking on this radio station, first of all, in the hope to get more supporters to my position of an action responsible that should be taken by my government in order to end in a positive way and be left with the Jewish, Zionist, democratic state intact at the end.
So are you actively forming an organization here, or is this just based in your contacts when you come here for business?
Oh, I didn't come for this.
No, of course
I came
not.
For business.
Of course.
But I have a movement in Israel. I'm part of a movement that supports the views I say now.
Right. So, and you would encourage support from as many American Jews as you can find.
If there is one, I'll be.
If there is one, you say. If there is one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Iftah Spector, thank you very, very much for joining us. Iftah Spector is a retired brigadier general in the Israeli Air Force and was the senior signatory of a recent petition calling on the Sharon government to withdraw from, end the occupation. And you can continue this conversation on our website, theconnection.org. Special thanks to NPR in Washington, D.C. for their engineering help with today's program. We had help today from Glenn Alexander and Matt Largy. The Connection is produced by Khalil Bird, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Orit Kuritsky-Fox, Jen Mattson, Lindsay Miller, Christina Russo, and Doug Shugerts. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Michael Goldfarb. In for Dick Gordon, this is The Connection.